at 8:03. Let the record reflect that Representatives Cott, Ogun, Davies, and Long, and Green are present. Today we are going to hear House Bill 341, and we have teleconference sites in Fairbanks and in Anchorage. We will have some testimony from Anchorage. I'm not sure whether we'll have anything other than questions from Fairbanks. As a brief review, you'll recall last week we talked about this and adopted this committee substitute, K version, and went through point by point with the drafter from our legal department. You've had a weekend to kind of look it over. At about that same time, the administration introduced a bill on this same subject. Now, that bill is not before us, not scheduled to come before us, so we can't act on it. But having talked with the governor and representative from the Department of Revenue and with the operators, it appears that there are some good and maybe not so good features of both of these bills. And so it is my intention, although I want to take testimony for the record, it is my intention that we would pass this bill on to judiciary where the questions or the differences that we're talking about between the administration's bill and this bill would be better addressed. It's not in the realm of resource concern, albeit both agree, that is the department and the committee, or at least I agree, that, and the governor agrees, that our current tax structure and appeals process is in need of repair. So it's not an issue that any longer needs to reside in resources, because that's the group that is affected by the appeal process that we have. And the fact that it needs to be fixed, I think, bodes well for the fact that all people concerned seem to think there is necessary repair needed. It's a matter of what's going to be the most usable and foolproof, as it were. So, having said that, we'll proceed through any questions that the committee members may have before we start. Then we'll take testimony from those here as well as on teleconference. And there are some questions, since we have reviewed this bill but have not reviewed the governor's bill, there'll be some questions I will ask, and you certainly are invited to ask Deborah Vogt from the Department of Revenue, so that whole record will then go to the Judiciary Committee, where I understand it will be put into a working subcommittee to iron out the differences and end up with a compatible bill that we can pass on through the legislative process. Are there any questions from the committee members about the procedure? Representative Davies.
I'm just trying to recall. I can't remember the referral path on the governor's bills, and I seem to have a recollection that it didn't go through the Judiciary Committee for some reason. Am I wrong about that?
I don't recall what the path is. I know it's...
Do you have a bill history packet or anything?
We can get one, and we can address it. We'll have one before we dismiss, but it is a different path, and that's one of the problems that the bills don't...
According to this record here, it doesn't...
I just got a brief note there. It just states that State Affairs, Oil and Gas, Resources, and Finance.
So okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, Resources is on there. I'm sorry. I didn't realize that. Yes, Representative Davies.
I guess the only committee before Finance that both sets of bills come to is this one. So I'm wondering if it might make more sense to have this subcommittee that you're discussing, which I support. I think that's a good idea, but perhaps to do it here at Resources, because it would be a more, given the way the assignments of the bills exist at this time anyway, it would be more easily achieved event.
I would agree with that if it were a resource issue that were the sticking point. It's the problems the resolve needs to be done on the legal aspects, which would better be served, I think, in a judiciary committee than a resource committee. The fact that the bill needs to be changed is a resource issue because it affects people dealing in resources. but I don't think it's the purview of this committee to act in judiciary matters. That seems to me, and that's the problems that we need to address, as appropriately should be done in Judiciary Committee. Representative Davies.
Well, I think as a general, it's an overarching kind of general sort of philosophical point of view. I agree with what you're saying, but as a practical matter, I think that we, even given the way these bills were referred, you can see that this one bill, even though it clearly is a judiciary matter, didn't even get a judiciary referral. So what I would suggest is that if we were to allow the two bills to come together in a subcommittee of resources, we could pass the whole packet on to judiciary, and they would still be able to accomplish the judicial review that you're discussing and have both vehicles before them.
The fact that we don't have the committee bill before the Judiciary Committee doesn't mean that it can't be reviewed in the Judiciary Subcommittee, and I still contend that those issues are better addressed by the people who deal with that than resource people dealing with judicial issues. And if there is a significant amount of concern, we can ask the Speaker to assign it to judiciary. I think what I'm trying to say is that I don't think we possess, or should we, in resources. I'll digress a little. I think what I've seen in my brief time in the legislature is that each committee wants to write the perfect bill, and they go far beyond the purview of that committee, and that's why we have special committees. We have a resource committee, and we have a judiciary committee, we have a finance committee, and each of those, as they work their way through, the bill works its way through, it gets complete purview from each of those committees. I think that's wrong. I think that slows down the process, and I think it's improper for that to happen. We should only address resource issues here. Judiciary should look at the legal aspect, and finance should look at the fiscal process. And so in that regard, I would prefer, if it be the will of the committee, that the Judiciary Subcommittee work out the, if they can work out the differences, and if it's a concern of the committee that they should have the governor's bill or the administration's bill to work on at the same time, I'm sure we can get the speaker to work that through. But I still submit that that won't be necessary unless that has to become the vehicle. So in other words, can there be a third issue or a modification of one through judiciary? And that's the attitude, and I think we'll hear from DOR. I think that's their preference, and I've talked with the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, and he favors that concept too. Are there any other questions on that issue or anything else? Let the record reflect that Representative Williams and Osterman have joined us, and that we have Representative Coring in the gallery. Vic, would you like to join us?
All right.
Any other questions before we take testimony? We have online in Anchorage, Tom Williams with BP Exploration. Tom, can you hear us?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman.
Would you care to identify yourself? And I guess I've done that, but anything you'd care to say about yourself before you testify?
My name is Tom Williams, and I'm Alaska Tax Counsel for BP Exploration, Alaska, Inc. And I'm here to testify on 341. Mr. Chairman, is it okay to proceed with my testimony?
Please do.
Thank you. On behalf of BP, thank you very much for this opportunity today to testify regarding House Bill number 341, and in particular on Warcraft K, of the committee substitute for the bill dated January 17, 1996. Which I understand from your remarks is now actually adopted as the committee CS. Alaska's present system of tax appeals needs reform. Present law makes the Commissioner of Revenue responsible for acting as prosecutor, judge, and jury in tax appeals. In other states, these functions may also be combined within one agency, but in those states, the potential problems from combining all three functions is avoided in practice by delegating and divide them up among several different people or divisions within the agency. In Alaska, already here, have failed to maintain a necessary division of these three functions. The dangerous overlapping in practice of prosecutorial, judicial, and juror roles within the Department of Revenue has been worsened by the considerable deference given by the courts to formal hearing decisions issued by the department. On issues where the facts are in dispute, the factual findings by the hearing officer are upheld unless they are not supported by substantial evidence in light of the whole record in the appeal. This does not mean that most of the evidence has to support the hearing officer's findings, only that there be some credible evidence, some evidence of substance, which supports those findings. This puts an all but impossible burden of proof on the taxpayer, despite the fact that the hearing officer's findings cannot become final without the signature of the commissioner, who is statutorily responsible for taking, and I quote from the statute, all steps necessary and proper to enforce full and complete compliance with the tax laws of the state, unquote. And the fact that the hearing officers serve at the pleasure of the commissioner further undercuts their independence as fact finders, yet they're still given deference, this high degree of deference in their fact findings. Moreover, even on questions of legal interpretation, which the judiciary normally views as its own particular province, the courts defer to the department's interpretation if they decide it involves the special expertise of the agency. And few other areas of the law are so technical and subject to agency expertise as tax. Reform of the present system can proceed along two avenues. One is to increase the actual independence of the people hearing tax appeals from influence by the Commissioner of Revenue. The other is to make the standard for reviewing the department's decisions in court less deferential to the agency's positions. There are now no less than three different proposals before the legislature to reform the present tax appeal system, each of which goes varying distances down the two avenues to reform. The first is HB 341, as originally introduced. In that version, the bill would create a new tax court in the judicial branch to hear tax cases. This clearly goes as far as possible toward making the tax tribunal independent of the department's influence, and it minimizes the need and opportunity for judicial deference to agency interpretations of the law. The second proposal is the CS that is before the committee today. The key feature of the CS is the opportunity for taxpayers to opt for trial de novo in Superior Court after an informal conference with the department, instead of the present process of having a formal hearing before a departmental hearing officer with a subsequent appeal to the courts to review the hearing decision. Trial de novo is a legal term that means having a trial of the facts as if there had been no earlier fact-finding by the agency. The CS would ensure that the jury role would be played by an impartial judge instead of a departmental employee. But trial de novo would still allow the courts to defer to the agency's expertise in interpreting the law whenever they felt the matter was one involving agency expertise. So in this sense, the draft CS does not go as far as the original bill providing for independence in the adjudication of tax cases. The third proposal on the table is the legislation recently introduced by the governor,
questions of Mr. Williams from any of the committee members? Thank you very much, Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I presume that you've all had a chance to review this little flowchart that staff prepared. Kind of helps understand how things go, and I think it was your request at our last meeting. Thank you, Representative Osterman. In Anchorage, we also have Don Seckers with Exxon. Are you there, Don?
Dan, yeah.
Or Dan, I'm sorry. Would you care to give your testimony, please?
Yes, I would. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dan Seckers. I'm Exxon's tax counsel here in Alaska. I want to thank you and the committee for allowing me the opportunity to testify before you today. At the onset, I would like to say that Exxon appreciates the willingness of this committee to address in today's hearing the important issue of how the current tax dispute resolution process in Alaska can be improved. We believe that with certain changes, a fairer and more efficient tax appeal process can be achieved that would benefit all parties to the process. We also believe that any substantive reform to the current tax dispute resolution process would be a step towards improving the business and investment climate in the state. A fair and impartial tax appeal process would enhance the working relationship between the state and the oil and gas industry and would send a clear signal to potential investors that Alaska wants to be viewed as a state willing to resolve tax disputes in a straightforward and impartial way. Given that there are two proposals introduced this session which address the tax dispute resolution process in Alaska, I plan to address general principles rather than comment on a specific bill. I would like to share with you some key elements that we will use to evaluate any proposal designed to improve the tax dispute resolution process in Alaska. First, Exxon believes that an appeal from the Department of Revenue's informal conference decision on a tax dispute must be heard and the facts and law must be developed outside the control of the Department of Revenue. Having the collection of taxes and resolving tax disputes within the same agency can fuel the perception of unfairness. Moving the tax appeal process outside of the Department of Revenue would go a long way towards persuading Alaska taxpayers that the tax appeal process contains the essential element of fairness. Second, the person presiding over the appeal must be independent. Currently, the person assigned to hear an appeal works for the commissioner and can be dismissed for any reason by the commissioner. If the person presiding over the appeal believes that his or her decision may impact his or her future job security, then that person's judgment has been compromised because such person is not free to decide the appeal based solely on the weight of the evidence presented and the applicable law. To maintain his or her independence, the person presiding over the appeal should be appointed for a fixed term of years and be subject to termination during that term only for cause. Third, the person presiding over the appeal must be required to resolve all questions of fact based on the majority of the weight of the evidence presented during the appeal. This preponderance of the evidence standard should be used to resolve all questions of fact unless another standard has been established by law for a particular question. Fourth, we believe the standards by which questions of law will be resolved should be clearly stated. To be truly impartial, the person presiding over the appeal must be required to resolve all questions of law under the person's own independent interpretation of what the law means after hearing all the evidence submitted by the parties. The only exception to this should be for those areas of law legislatively delegated to the commissioner by you, the members of the legislature. With regard to these areas, deference should be given to the position taken by the Department of Revenue, but only if the position has a reasonable basis in law. Any areas where judicial deference is to be given to the Department of Revenue should be codified by you so that both the taxpayer and the Department of Revenue know such areas of deference. Fifth, the appeal process should allow all parties to the appeal to gather relevant evidence through a fair and reasonable discovery process. Sixth, the appeal process should allow the introduction of fair and reasonable evidence. The admissibility of any evidence should rest with the discretion of the person presiding over the appeal. No evidence should be statutorily determined to be irrelevant or inadmissible for all purposes. Finally, it is possible to argue that it may be helpful if the person presiding over the appeal is experienced in the field of tax law. While such experience may not be essential to providing taxpayers with an impartial tax appeal process in Alaska, it could be helpful towards the efficient and speedy conduct of the appeal. Such experience, however, is not of sufficient importance to override impartiality in any appeals process. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, Exxon stands ready to work with you, the legislature, the governor, and his administration in achieving meaningful reforms to the current appeal process through incorporation of the key elements I have discussed here today. Working together, we can further our objective of obtaining a fair and efficient tax dispute resolution process, one that sends a positive signal about the business climate in Alaska. Mr. Chairman, thank you again for allowing me this time to address you and your committee.
Thank you. Are there any questions of Mr. Seckers from any of the committee members? Hearing none, are there any other people in Anchorage who wish to testify? Apparently not. Are there any persons in Fairbanks who wish to testify? Apparently not. We do have two people in the audience who wish to testify. We have Norma Calvert with Marathon. Would you come forward and identify yourself, please?
Good morning, Chairman Green and members of the House Resources Committee. My name is Norma Calvert, and I am here today representing Marathon Oil Company. Chairman Green, before I share with you Marathon's comments on the committee substitute to House Bill 341, I'd like to thank you and your staff and this committee for your dedicated efforts to improve the tax appeals process in Alaska. We believe the system can be modified for the benefit of the taxpayers and for the state of Alaska. As stated in Marathon's testimony given at the October hearing, we strongly support the modification of the appeals process. Although we believe a tax court, as proposed in HB 341, as originally introduced, would provide the most impartial process of resolving tax disputes, we also understand the concerns raised at the October hearing by the Supreme Court system with respect to establishing a specialty court in Alaska due to the small number of taxpayers and cases to be resolved. Our testimony in October gave a detailed synopsis of our concerns of the current system. To review, our number one concern is the empowerment within the Department of Revenue to audit, issue assessments, and govern the hearings for the dispute resolution. If the taxpayer does feel it necessary to appeal the DOR's decision, a de novo review is not given at the Superior Court level, and great deference is given to the DOR's decision, making it nearly impossible to obtain an impartial review of the case. Recognizing the complications in forming a tax court in Alaska, we do support the committee substitute bill to allow for a de novo hearing outside the Department of Revenue at the Superior Court level. In continuing your efforts to improve the tax appeals process, we would like for you to consider the essential characteristics of an unbiased system. One is the appeals process should be independent of the audit and assessment process outside the Department of Revenue. Taxpayers should be allowed a de novo hearing before an impartial tribunal. And the burden of proof on questions of fact should be a preponderance of evidence standard. We believe a de novo review at the Superior Court level provides resolutions to the concerns we have expressed and is a great step in moving toward an impartial tax appeals process. There are a number of ways the current system could be improved, and we support the committee substitute as an alternative to the tax court bill as originally introduced. We encourage you, the Alaska Legislature, and the administration to work toward a resolution that truly provides an impartial appeal process in Alaska. Such changes will lead to expedited resolution of tax issues and will be of benefit to all parties involved. Most importantly, it sends a message of tax fairness that is critical in encouraging future investments in Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity this morning to share our comments.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the witness? Of the member? Yes, Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr.
To Ms. Calvert?
Right. Yeah, I wondered if you had reviewed the governor's bill, House Bill 427, and if Marathon had a position at this time on that approach as an alternative to the one that's before us.
We have our tax organization.
You're welcome to answer that. I think that might be somewhat out of order, other than the fact that you're just wanting to know it in a general overall rather than anything specific, since that bill's not before us.
Well, I noted that the testimony of the previous two gentlemen, you know, addressed that question, and just wanted to know if there, you know, if they also supported the general notion of, for example, administrative law judges looking at the issue, or would be the general idea that that maybe a process in Department of Administration would be acceptable as opposed to Superior Court for the formal hearing process.
Chairman Green, Representative Davies, I'd be glad to answer that kind of in a broad term. I am not in our tax organization, so I don't want to speak very specifically, but they have reviewed the governor's proposal. I guess our general feeling is that this is a much more impartial process to have the de novo review at the Superior Court level, but we will be working with the other members of the industry to come to a consensus.
Thank you.
Any other questions of Marathon Representative? Thank you very much. We also have in the audience Ms. Beverly Ward of ARCO.
My testimony before I read it or after I read it? Would you like to read along with me?
Please. Thank you.
And you'll see if I stumble over the words here.
It's early in the morning. We'll forgive you.
Very early in the morning here.
While that's being done, might I ask Ms. Calvert if there is a possibility of maybe getting your testimony copied, too, for the record.
We have it.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Jeff, I have extra copies for the public or anyone who would like a copy. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Beverly Ward. I represent ARCO Alaska, and we appreciate the opportunity to read a statement into the record. Unfortunately, Bob McManus, our Vice President of Tax, is out of state right now, and so he has asked if I would read the statement. ARCO Alaska, Inc. appreciates the opportunity to present its views regarding the legislation to change the procedures for hearing tax disputes and looking for ways to improve that process. This has been an area of great concern to ARCO for more than 20 years, and we applaud the efforts of Representative Green and the efforts of the Knowles administration to deal with this complex issue in a thoughtful and fair-minded manner. ARCO believes that the present system for tax hearings is broken. It is so broken that it is rarely used because taxpayers go to great lengths to avoid it. ARCO has used the existing formal hearing process only once in the past 10 years. There is a widely held perception among taxpayers that the existing system does not provide taxpayers with the opportunity for a fair and independent hearing. In the past few weeks, we have looked at three different proposals for changing the tax hearing process. House Bill number 341, introduced by Representative Green, would establish a separate tax court. A newly adopted CS for the House Bill 341, also presented by Representative Green, would provide for tax hearings before the Superior Court. And House Bill 427, introduced by the Governor, would establish an administrative law court outside the Department of Revenue. While these bills each take different approaches, each of these proposals would be much fairer than the present system, and we urge the legislature to give each of these bills a full hearing. In judging these three proposals and any other proposals which might emerge, ARCO urges the legislature to critically examine the proposals against nine criteria which ARCO believes should be present in any tax hearing process. First, the hearing should be outside the control of the Department of Revenue. Second, the hearing officer or judge should serve for a term of years rather than be subject to termination at will. The hearing officer or judge should be specifically required to have experience in the area of tax law. The hearing should be a de novo proceeding where the hearing officer or judge has original jurisdiction and hears evidence without regard to the proceedings below. The burden of proof on questions of fact should be preponderance of the evidence. The standard of review of questions of law should be substitution of judgment. Where authority has been legally vested in the Commissioner of Revenue to interpret a revenue provision, a reasonable basis standard should apply. A taxpayer should have the opportunity to conduct legitimate discovery that neither the taxpayer nor the Department of Revenue should be permitted to abuse the discovery process. The hearing process structure should, to the extent possible, take into account the uniqueness of Alaska's situation of very few taxpayers and tax appeals. The hearing system should be tailored to Alaska's needs and be as efficient as possible. ARCO urges this committee to apply these criteria to all three proposals as well as to the existing law. We believe a proposal might emerge which meets all of the criteria and is acceptable to the stakeholders, that is, the legislature, the administration, the court system, and the Alaska taxpayers. In closing, ARCO would like to stress two points. The first is that from our perspective, this is a very important issue which has long-term implications for how taxpayers will view the business climate in the state and the fairness of the playing field. The second is that this is a major opportunity where all of the stakeholders are making a bona fide attempt to establish a fair tax hearing system, and every bill that has been proposed is a significant improvement over the existing system. Once again, we applaud your efforts and the efforts of the administration. We stand ready to do whatever we can to facilitate the enactment of fair tax hearing legislation.
Thank you, Beverly. Are there any questions of Ms. Ward? Yes. Representative Ogun.
Beverly, good to see you again. I've heard it several times mentioned here that the burden of proof should be preponderance of evidence. Do you care to... What is the current burden of proof now with the Department of Revenue?
Well, you know, again, I'm not from the tax department either, so I'll probably get myself in big trouble or confuse
the
issue.
There
may be people on teleconference like Mr. Tom Williams who would give you a better answer, but my understanding is that a preponderance of the evidence means that, you know, it's the majority of the evidence has to support the argument rather than maybe one isolated fact or incident.
I think that's correct, and we are going to hear from Deborah Vogt of the Department of Revenue.
I'll defer the question.
I think that's the right answer, too.
I'm sure to tell my boss I got the right answer.
All right. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other testimony from our teleconference? We have Ms. Deborah Vogt with the Department of Revenue, who has graciously consented to give us an overview of her bill and also to entertain any questions of the differences, I understand it, for the record at least. Would you identify yourself, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Deborah Vogt, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Revenue. I hadn't really planned on giving an overview of the governor's bill except to talk about general concepts, which everyone else has done this morning. And I would like to say for the record that I appreciate the comments of the industry representatives in doing just that, in talking about the principles that they would like to look at rather than talking about the particular line-by-line problems or benefits of any particular approach. I think that'll help us in the long run in coming to an agreement on this issue, which is a very important issue. I thought I might give just a little bit of background for some of the members of the committee who were unable to attend the October hearing. as I said then, the Department of Revenue within the Knowles administration decided to look at this issue, which has been, as you can see, around for a long time. And I'd like to state very clearly that I don't believe the current system is broken. I believe the current system is fair and can be used by taxpayers to resolve their differences in a fair way. But I certainly believe that it is perceived to be broken, as you've heard today, and we've always heard and will continue to hear. And so we decided to look into dealing with the perception that the department's system is unfair. And the first thing we did was a survey of all 50 of the other states, talked to everybody in the tax departments, talked to each of the tax departments in each of the 50 states, and came away with the conclusion that the department's system of having the department review the a taxpayer's dissatisfaction with his assessment in front of the department and then have it go on appeal to the superior court on a substantial evidence test, as has been described, is in the distinct minority. There are only a handful of states that do it like we do. There used to be more. They have been moving away from it. So the next thing we did was contract with an outside consultant, a man named Paul Frankel, with the firm of Morrison Forrester. He's in their New York office, who has consulted with a number of other states on tax resolution, tax dispute procedures. And he reviewed our laws, our regulations, and some proposed regulations that we had, and advised us, as he told me on our first phone call that he would, that we should move toward a system of independence. That he has three basic criteria that he uses to judge a system. One is the independence of the person who does the de novo review, who does the trial, basically. The second is that he believes it's important that the taxpayer not have to pay a bill before the taxpayer can have that review. And the third is that the individuals performing the trial have tax expertise, that they be tax professionals. I think, let's see, where's the flow sheet that you have? You can sort of see on the left-hand side our current system. We have taxpayer files a return. Most taxpayers, their return is simply reviewed and accepted. With the oil and gas taxpayers, we have a policy and have had for many years that every tax return is audited. And so the tax returns, both for the severance tax and for the corporate income tax of the industry taxpayers, are constantly reviewed. And I think it's rare indeed, and probably has not happened, that the audit process has not resulted in some disagreement with the taxpayer's initial filing and with an assessment. So this is, the tax bill is then issued. At that point, under our current system, the taxpayer has his choice of going to informal, well, can pay the bill, or go to informal conference or to formal hearing. So the informal conference, which is an opportunity really to come in and just chat with the department about what the department may have done wrong. And in a $200 million dispute, that it's going to be a little more formal than with a fisherman over a couple hundred dollars of custom processing dispute or something like that. And so it'll be varying how formal or informal it is, but it's not a trial. It's not it's not an adversarial process where two parties put on evidence in front of a judge and the judge makes a decision on the record. The taxpayer can skip that process and go straight to formal hearing, which is a more formal proceeding. It is an adversarial process. It is a three component system where you have a judge and two parties. And the judge is the hearing officer, who is, as the taxpayers have pointed out, an employee of the Department of Revenue and works, in fact, in the commissioner's office and holds, in fact, it's the statutory duty of the commissioner to hold the hearing himself. And I think you heard from Tom Williams, I know when he was commissioner, he did hold at least one hearing that I can remember. So the hearing officer really holds the hearing on behalf of the commissioner and makes a recommended decision to the commissioner. The commissioner then adopts or rejects or revises the decision, sends it back for more work, and puts out the decision under the commissioner's name. That decision is then can be appealed by the taxpayer to the Superior Court. And as the taxpayers have testified, the standard of review at the Superior Court is the substantial evidence standard. And what that means is that the judge looks at the record to discover whether there is any evidence, any good evidence at all in the record that supports the conclusion that the hearing officer came to. So that, for example, you might think about a traffic accident dispute and whether the light was red or green. You might have six witnesses that said the light was red and one witness that said the light was green. The hearing officer believed the person who said the light was green, and the case went on to the Superior Court. The Superior Court judge would then look at whether that one person who testified that the light was green was, whether that was good evidence. And if it was substantial, it would affirm the decision disregarding all the other people who said the light was red. Now, it may be that the hearing officer determined that all six of the people who said the light was red were drunk and were, in fact, not even at the site of the accident, and that's why the hearing officer didn't believe them. But that's the job of the trial court, basically, is to weigh the evidence and to believe the witnesses. And there was a question earlier what the standard at the Department of Revenue is, and it is a preponderance of evidence standard in front of the department's hearing officer. The difficulty that the taxpayers have with that is that it's the department's hearing officer who views the facts and not an impartial party. So I guess there's been a lot of confusion about what the standard de novo means, and it really just means the trial, the point at which you try your facts. And it may happen in tax proceedings. In tax proceedings, your facts are all going to have been looked at before. They should have been looked at by the auditor in the first instance. And you appeal your tax bill to informal conference and to formal hearing. And it's confusing to talk about the concept of appeal with the concept of de novo. But what it really means, as several people have said, is that the person who weighs the evidence de novo does so as though no proceedings below have taken place, does so fresh of new. Principles that we've been talking about as applied to the committee substitute that is before you, I think we have some problems with the way the bill is drafted and would appreciate and are glad to hear that there will be a further opportunity to try to work out what will eventually come out of this effort. We don't believe that the committee substitute, for example, provides the full independence that that the taxpayers are looking for, and the reason is that it only applies to certain taxes. Well, there's two reasons. One is that it only applies to certain taxes. Now, that could easily be fixed by simply having it apply to all taxes. And second is that there's the taxpayer's choice under the committee substitute whether to go through the Department of Revenue proceedings or go to court. And that, for a small taxpayer, may be an important decision because the court proceedings are going to be more formal. It's going to be harder to do it pro se without a lawyer. And so small taxpayers may feel like this hasn't really fixed anything for them because they have to... they're going to have to go, they feel like they have to go through the department's procedures, although some of them, I'll tell you, may prefer that, and the reason that they prefer the department's system is because of the tax expertise that we have, which is the next category of principles that I'd like to talk about. The legislation that is before you does not provide for tax professionals to review the tax cases. You will appeal to the Superior Court. It's not even clear whether you get a jury or not, and that's something I think we'd have to think about. But you certainly will get the luck of the draw in the judge, and the judge will not have any particular background or expertise in tax matters. And many taxpayers are maybe not the ones you hear from today, but fishermen and small corporations and so on are very dependent on the tax expertise within the department in helping resolve their problems with their returns.
Yes, Representative Osterman.
With the current schedule, they still have that ability.
I'm sorry?
They still have that ability.
With which?
With 340 month.
Yes, they could stay within the department and go to formal hearing. But it, to the extent that they may or may not believe that the system is broken, they can't go outside of the department without going to considerably greater expense and more complex proceedings. Another element that Mr. Frankel talked about was that the taxpayer should be entitled to have his or her trial before paying any taxes. And this legislation requires that the taxpayer pay all the undisputed taxes, which seems to make sense, but also that the taxpayer post a bond for the disputed taxes. Now, that's what we do when the case goes to Superior Court, but we've already held the trial by the time it goes to Superior Court. So that's sort of a minor element, could be changed, that we don't really agree with. Another problem that I didn't really talk about is the current system raises an issue for the department that every commissioner over the years has grappled with, and that is how to preserve some judicial independence for those cases that are going to come to the commissioner's office for resolution. And every commissioner has probably grappled with this and maybe resolved it differently. What most do is say that when a matter comes to the commissioner's office, when it comes to formal hearing, the commissioner must then remove himself from the details of the case on the division side. And so, you know, that's probably not too hard for a commissioner in a state with thousands and thousands and thousands of taxpayers, no one of whom pays more than 2 or 3% of the state's taxes. It's very hard in a state where you have three big taxpayers, and the cases as they are coming through the process are important and head on completely. The commissioner's not going to know until the taxpayer makes the choice of either going through the department proceedings or going to court, whether what route that case is on, and the commissioner's not going to know how to handle himself, whether to dive into the case or stand back from it. And so that's a difficulty. And I guess from the department, we feel like if we're gonna do this, which I think we all agree we should, let's do the whole thing. Let's get the hearings out of the Department of Revenue, and then the commissioner's role becomes clear for all cases. I might discuss the last principle, and then I might discuss the governor's bill for just a moment. The final principle is that we think whatever system is used should streamline the cases. We've seen some of these cases take, as most of you no doubt know, years and years and years to resolve, and part of that's because they're so big, and part of that's because the laws were not as clear as they are now, but part of it's because the procedures are not designed for streamlining the cases. And with all due respect, Mr. Chairman, I think your bill would make things worse. I think that court proceedings are by nature going to be more complex, more drawn out, more discovery, more formal rules of evidence. They're going to take longer, and it's going to be longer before the public knows how much money it's entitled to from the taxpayers. On those points, the governor's bill, without going into a lot of detail, but it would provide for the formal hearing function for taxes to be moved to the Department of Administration outside the purview of the Department of Revenue. And as you know, Mr. Chairman, we've worked with sort of a committee approach with some of the representatives of some of the taxpayers, with the Department of Law attorneys, and with representatives of the Department of Revenue to try to come to a consensus on how this should be approached, and some of the toughest folks were those in our own Department of Law to get by. But what we agreed to do was set up an independent administrative law judge, hearing officer, same function, in the Department of Revenue, that the main chief ALJ, if there's more than one, at least the chief, would be hired for a term of years and would be dismissible only for cause. And those two elements are an attempt to give the taxpayers a little more confidence that this is truly a protected, not a political choice, but a ongoing professional appointment. The ALJ must have tax background. The standard of review is clearly articulated in the governor's legislation, and I think it fits in with the articulated requirements of that the industry folks have testified to today. The ALJ would review factual questions on a preponderance of evidence, unless some other standard is required by law. And there are a couple of instances where for instance, the Supreme Court of the United States has repeatedly said in certain income tax matters or by statute a different standard is set, and there's even one reprinted in your bill because you changed the hearing procedure for determinations of what the economic limit is, and the statute there says the taxpayer has to show by clear and convincing evidence, and so that standard would remain. The ALJ would use the clear and convincing evidence standard for that question. So if a different standard is articulated in the law, that's what he or she would use. Questions of law should be resolved on the substitution of judgment standard, on the ALJ's independent judgment. And questions that are committed to the agency's discretion or questions of basic policy should be reviewed and should be deferred to if there's a reasonable basis for those. And the department obviously felt very strongly that we didn't want an outside hearing officer or judge to be substituting his or her judgment for that of the commissioner on those things that are really committed to the department's judgment, on policy issues and so on. And I think Mr. Secrest testified from Exxon that he would like to see that standard for those questions committed by statute to agency discretion. And the department would feel that goes too far, that there are issues that the courts are going to find are really founded in the expertise of the department, or that are really basic policy issues that the legislature's not going to be able to think of every one of them and articulate them in statutes. So I think we all agree that the department's policy determinations had ought to be left to the department. But I think there's still some disagreement between the department and the taxpayers as to where that line might be drawn. The governor's bill then resolves the dual role with the commissioner problem because it takes all of the tax hearings out of the department. It has a lot of provisions in it to streamline the cases. It has provisions dealing with discovery, provisions dealing with evidence. And many of these sort of come from our experience in handling the tax cases and royalty cases in the past, that taxpayers tend to ask us, for example, for the legislative history of a lot of bills that never got passed. And we do a lot of work digging around and trying to find that stuff. And it's not relevant. As a matter of law, it's not relevant. And so the bill would because you can't conclude anything from something the legislature didn't do. And so we've tried to cut back on that sort of thing in the governor's bill. I think that really concludes my analysis. Again, I would say that I'm very pleased that the committee is taking on this issue. I think that it is an issue that had ought to be resolved, and I hope that we can come to a resolution, notwithstanding what is beginning to look like an acrimonious session. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that the members.
Are there any questions, Ms. Vogt, from the committee members?
I have one or two.
Yes, Representative Hogan, would you please? Oh, by the way, I let the record reflect that we have been joined by Representative Nicolai some time back.
Mr.
Go ahead,
Chairman.
Mr. Hogan. Representative Hogan.
Thank you, sir. This obviously is a fundamental change in the way that, the state does business with the taxpayers, and I guess I have one kind of question on a bigger scale. Is, are we trying to treat a symptom of a problem here? I mean, if every, almost every or virtually vast majority of every tax situation ends up in dispute, would it be a better approach to write better tax laws that are less ambiguous, that everyone could understand, so there was less disputes, maybe a simpler method of calculating the tax, or try to address it from that issue rather than is this possibly fixing the symptom of the problem?
Through the chair, Representative Hogan, that's a very good point, and it's something that the department is working very hard on. We have had a series of regulation review and writing projects going on, one begun during the last administration and another this administration for the oil and gas taxes, in order to do exactly that, to narrow the grounds for dispute, and certainly the more you can do that, the way better off you are in the long run. There are going to be disputes no matter how clearly you write the law. And if you think about, for example, on the corporate income tax side, issues like is a certain foreign tax an income tax or not? And that's a question because if it's an income tax, then it's not a deduction against our income tax. If it's an excise tax, then it is. That kind of question is going to come up over and over again. The legislature really can't legislate in that area, and we can't write regulations. But one of the things that can happen is that we can go to hearing on some of these issues and get precedential hearing decisions. And I think you've heard testimony this morning from some taxpayers that they're reluctant to use the hearing system. And I think what we have seen that most of the tax matters and royalty matters, for that matter, have been settled in the last 6 or 8 years. And what I see from a tax administrator's perspective is that we don't have answers to some of the recurring kind of questions that I would like to see get answered. And I think a hearing process that everyone believes is fair can help us move forward in that direction. But I certainly think clear laws where they can be made are a great idea.
Yes, Representative Long.
Yeah, thank you. This bill that's before us right now is relating to certain taxes. Is that, you know, and apparently it's geared toward resource taxes. Are all those taxes involved in this bill? I mean,
yes.
Through the chair. The committee substitute that you have before you addresses the major taxes, the oil severance tax, the corporate income tax. Those are the big ones. The procedures that it articulates apply to those taxes. They apply to the mining license tax, which is not a big tax. I think probably $200,000 or $300,000 is the most we've ever gotten from the mining license tax. And I guess I can recall one hearing dispute, but very rarely does it go to hearing. It applies to the fisheries business tax. There are some oddities in the way it works. It applies to the fisheries business tax, but it doesn't apply to the landing tax. And those taxes are really the left and right hand of each other for onshore processing and offshore processing. And there's no particular reason why it should apply to one and not the other. It applies to the oil severance tax, but not the conservation tax. And the conservation tax is really a function of the same production that the severance tax is, and it would seem like they ought to go hand in hand. Those are things that I would hope we could iron out in further committees. I'd like to see it apply, anything that comes out of this effort, apply to all taxes, not specific ones.
Representative Osterman.
While we're on the subject, Mr. Chairman, you want to answer that? I mean, why don't we have all taxes in this?
Well, it started as has been testified to, that it started off as a tax court specifically for the majority of the taxes, the oil taxes. It's taking a somewhat different approach now, and I can understand the department's desire, if you're going to adjust the tax appeal process, that it should be for all taxes, albeit the number would be greater, but the amount would be rather small compared to the ones that this originally addressed. And some of the taxes were left out, like the tax for the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. To my knowledge, that hasn't been in dispute, so there wasn't any reason to have that. I mean, that's based on the production, and that's a finite number, and so you apply the rate times that, and you get the tax. So that wasn't a dispute issue. So there are, an enlarging number that are being reviewed, but it wasn't the intent originally.
With the changes, would there be a problem with including them all now?
I don't see any reason that there would be. I'd have to review that, but I that's why I think, we're out of this realm into a more judicial realm, and see if there is a problem with it. I don't see any right now.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Davies.
With all due respect, it seems, though, that is, in fact, whether the oil and gas conservation tax and whether certain fisheries taxes should be included or not is really more a resource issue than a judicial issue, I would think. And that maybe I would suggest that maybe our committee ought to be making some recommendation, maybe not a formal amendment, but perhaps some recommendation along those lines as we forward the packet to judiciary, if that's what we're going to do.
But I certainly have no objection to that. That'd be fine. In fact, I had asked for Deborah's permission to ask some questions about the governor's bill so that would be a record that also would be transmitted to the Judiciary Committee.
Appreciate that.
Representative Williams.
Yeah. I'm going to ask a question. You mentioned that other people use the tax process here, appeals process. What's the racial, how many fishermen use it, TAC, versus oil industry?
Mr. Chairman,
are there a lot of fishermen out there that use it, or are there a lot of...
I would say that the majority of our appeals involve the corporate income tax, and we have had, not very many of these cases that we're talking about here, we've had over the last 4 or 5 years approximately 15 to 20 cases coming out of our income and excise division going to formal hearing. And income and excise is responsible for the corporate income taxes, all the fisheries taxes, really everything but the oil severance tax and the former separate accounting. And we've had approximately 4 coming out of the oil and gas side, which involve the severance tax and former separate accounting. Of the 20 or so coming out of income and excise, I really would have to say off the top of my head, and I did sit as chief hearing officer for 3 years during the Cooper administration, that almost all of those would have been corporate income tax. There would be maybe an occasional fish tax. Not many.
Yes, Representative Williams.
And it's corporate. The people that are using the tax appeals process, is there a way, would some of the process that is listed here in this flow chart, is there a way that some of the people at these 20, is that what you said, 20 people or whatever, companies, is there a way that in the present appeal, audit and appeals process today, if I heard in the testimony earlier that they are not, they're very reluctant in using that process and they would like to see a different type of process, so that we wouldn't have to go through the formal hearings, which probably cost money. And so, why would they say that they're reluctant to use this?
Mr. Chairman, the reluctance that I'm aware of really comes from the large taxpayers. I honestly cannot answer whether the smaller taxpayers are reluctant to use our current hearing process because they might perceive that it's biased. I don't know whether that's true or not. I do know that the smaller taxpayers often do rely on the tax expertise of the people that they deal with within the department right now. Most of the matters, as you can see, are going to be resolved at informal conference, and that process wouldn't change either under Representative Green's bill or under the governor's bill, except that you would no longer have the choice of skipping it. Most of the small taxes matters are resolved at informal conference where the taxpayer, and that can be really very informal. It can be the taxpayer just comes in and chats with the conferee and says, well, here's my documentation for this expenditure and what do you need for that? And the conferee says, well, if you get a copy of this, this will be fine. And that's how those things are resolved. Or the conferee can explain why such and such is not deductible or where. So most of those don't get appealed to formal hearing or to the court, or would they be appealed to the Department of Administration? They just wouldn't appear in any of these systems that we're talking about because they get resolved at informal conference. Now, those who do go on, the governor's bill would move the same formal conference proceeding that we currently have outside the department, over to the Department of Administration. And that proceeding then can be as informal or as formal as is appropriate under the circumstances. So if it really is just a taxpayer wanting to represent him or herself in front of the appeals officer without a lawyer, without a lot of witnesses and so on, just to bring in some papers and say, I think they mean this, that's perfectly fine. That's one of the differences, I think, between the governor's bill and Representative Green's bill, because Representative Green's bill makes him make the choice between staying with the department, which for all I know they perceive as unfair, I don't know, or going to court where they have to get a lawyer. And it really is going to become more formal.
I guess where I'm coming from is, you know, we have to try to get this process so it's friendly to everyone.
Right.
And not perceived as like some of the testimony has been said, that they're afraid to use it. So either way, I guess we're trying to get to the same point. At least that's what I'm hearing from you.
Right.
Is that correct?
I think so.
In Anchorage, would either Tom Williams or Dan Seckers, are either of you there, or would you like to respond to that? Must have gone back to work. Anyone in the audience care to respond to that? Or?
Chairman?
Yes.
Could you repeat the question? It was very inaudible.
All right.
Excuse me, Representative Williams.
I guess where I was coming from is that you made someone testified this morning that they felt very uncomfortable with the present process of the audit and appeals area, and it felt like they were weren't getting a fair hearing, and I would like to know how we can make it more friendlier. And the governor's office says that they do not believe that the version K of House Bill 341 will be able to get there, or does not agree with this process. Or could you expound a little bit more on that?
Hey, Mr. Chairman, this is Tom Williams, and I'll try to answer that. I think that that small taxpayers may feel that there is a problem of lack of impartiality. That it's not merely a perception that big taxpayers like BP feel. I think that many small taxpayers, the sort of people who would like to come in with their own records and not be represented with an attorney, those types of taxpayers don't see the fine points that lawyers like myself or Zvot see in terms of burden of proof and preponderance of the evidence and trial and over and all those sorts of things. That sort of stuff that kind of gets lost on them. I think what they simply know is that their juror, their judge, is an employee of the commissioner who is also responsible for prosecuting the audit claims. And I think that's what gives rise to the sense with little people as well, that it's tough to get a fair shake. I did work for a period of time for Cook Inlet Region. Before I started working for BP, I was general counsel there. While Cook Inlet Region is really a small corporation, as to the terms it is small compared to the oil companies, and we did get a tax assessment because Cook Inlet Region had some royalty income from leases in the Kenai Peninsula. And that royalty income was subject to sharing under Section 7I of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. And so not only on behalf of its shareholders, but on behalf of all the regions and village corporations who would share under 7I and 70% of that revenue, SERI wanted to pursue or contest the assessment that had been issued against it. It ended up being settled, I think, in part because there is a problem of that even the formal hearings currently can become very, very cumbersome. There is this expensive discovery. There's also a penchant to have pre-filed testimony where all the witnesses say what they're going to say, and then they just come in for cross-examination, basically. That's an expensive way to do things. And I think that's part of what becomes a factor for a little taxpayer, is you do have an expense of going forward. I think that the point that Deborah made about the governor's bill, having flexibility for the ALJ to relax the procedures where you have, in fact, a mom-and-pop corporate entity coming in, contesting an assessment or disallowing an interest deduction, and they find the receipt and they come in and show it. So that's the sort of thing that is good. There is flexibility in the governor's bill to deal with small taxpayers that way. But I think that we there has been a problem in the past of the merging of these roles. I know when I was commissioner, that people who were not involved in the hearing didn't hear the witnesses. Nevertheless, we're editing
and revising the hearing officer's findings and conclusions of law. And that was legally permissible. I would contend that it is, but it's not something that creates a good atmosphere of trust between the taxpayers and the department. And I think that's kind of the real problem that everybody is agreeing. We've set aside the arguments about the legal merits of things, because that's really irrelevant. We're looking at the future together and trying to put our differences apart or behind us and look more where our interests are in common. And this perceived problem, this perceived lack of impartiality, is an issue that is an obstacle towards Alaska's competitiveness. And the administration and the legislature are both concerned about this, and so are we. And that's why all three of these bills, we can debate the relative merits of them, and there are some factors, strengths to one that may be missing in another. But compared to the present system, all three of them are so far ahead of where we are now that it would be almost preposterous that disagreement about which one is the very, very best would keep something from happening. And so that's really what our concern is we want to work with an agreement on principles, and then put those principles down in words and move forward, because we do have agreement on so many of the principles. I think that the task is certainly much easier than it is to put together a spending plan or a budget. And so that's where BP is on the issue. We're prepared to work as hard as we have to try to craft something that is going to reflect one of these measures, or perhaps a combination of them, but that represents a significant improvement from where we are.
Thank you. Any other? Yes, Representative Cott.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Ford, I want to return to my colleague's question from the Valley. It seems to me that in a time where the public is calling for reducing bureaucracy, what this and probably any other bill is attempting to do is to increase at least a very minuscule amount of the bureaucratic structure. A couple years ago, we dealt with the tax issue, and it called us back into special session. It seems like the notion back then by the department was that they were going to take a very close look at revising the rules regarding taxpayers' processes. Haven't we made any inroad in solving the problem that basically would take care of this whole issue? It wouldn't be before us, at least to the extent that it's before us now.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure what testimony or agreements you may be referring to a couple years ago, but I think I can address the issue. There are going to be tax disputes as long as we have taxes, and we're going to have a system for resolving them. Certainly, as I said to Representative Ogun, we have tried very hard over the past couple of years, and it was the prior administration that began the effort, to work on the regulations so that the magnitude of the disputes is as narrow as possible. But you're never going to get all the way there. There are going to be whatever regulation you write, there's going to be the argument on the edge of it that somebody's going to want to make. What we're certainly striving to do is to make the disputes with the industry of the $20 million magnitude rather than the $200 or $2 billion magnitude. And I think we're making a lot of progress in doing that. Additionally, I think that we have made a lot of progress in resolving the old disputes, and most of them, as you know, have been settled. but our tax program is getting very close to current and will be current within a couple of years. Some taxpayers are current now. We have two really old disputes still remaining, but we're really almost there in terms of having an ongoing rolling tax program where the audits butt up against the prior, you know, the current year's taxes and so on. And I think we are seeing a real improvement in tax administration in the state. We're simply going to need a way to resolve those remaining issues, whether they be, as I say, issues about whether the Liberian widget tax is an income tax or not, or whether they be issues about the prevailing value of oil in the Gulf Coast market. Things change, things grow, things move. There will be disputes, but this is not the only thing that we're trying to do to improve things. There are a couple of other efforts that have worked very well, I think.
What you're suggesting then is we have lesser of a problem today than we had 3 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
On that point, if kind of backing up what Representatives Cotton Ogun said, there were several disputed taxes that lingered for a long time that were settled in the last couple of years. Were the issues on which those turned common in any of those, that those issues that were common could be addressed first, as opposed to, for example, Company A might have a problem with widgets in Liberia, but Company B and C and D, that's not an issue. But they all have a problem on what the true value might be at a certain point.
On the, Mr. Chairman, on the severance tax side, absolutely. On the severance tax side, there's two issues: what's the value of the oil, and how much did it cost you to get it there? And there are, you know, 1,000 ramifications of each of those issues. But we've come a very long ways toward ending our arguments really over the value issue through the market has become more transparent. We're using spot prices pretty uniformly in most markets now. Foreign sales and exports may complicate the picture again. The markets could go opaque again. They're pretty transparent right now, but we have I think in the companies, I'd invite them to comment. I think we have come a long ways toward narrowing, if not really getting rid of our disputes on the value issues. Transportation, there's still some remaining questions. We might be asking the legislature to help us out. I don't know. But I think we're coming along.
Great. Yes, Representative Osterman.
Just to help me clarify a little bit, because we have talked about two bills here and 427. If I understand, I'm trying to use the graphics for them because I can understand it better than a bunch of legalese. In the governor's bill, House Bill 427, if I understand correctly now, the process will stay the same. We'll have the informal hearing. And then if it goes to what's called a formal hearing, as far as what we're talking about now, it would go then to a hearing officer in the Department of Administration.
With one exception, and the exception would be that the informal conference would no longer be a matter of choice. It would be mandatory to go through the informal conference proceeding within the department.
That would be the same as the current version of 341 would be the same.
Right. It would make the informal conference mandatory, and then everything goes outside the department to the formal hearing at the Department of Administration.
And after the formal hearing with the Department of Administration, then it could go to, it would go to Superior Court if appealed again.
Right.
With the de novo clause.
No, the appeal at the Superior Court would be on the record and would be an appeal of an administrative decision like it is now.
All right, thank you.
Yes, Representative Cott.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I have one more question here if I can find it. I assume that when any of these cases end up in Superior Court, the Department of Revenue will be represented by counsel. Is that correct up to this point?
Yes.
And will counsel be retained on contract, or will the Department of Law be the ones responsible for providing that counsel?
Mr. Chairman, that's really more a question for the Department of Law. They make that decision. I think in the past we have seen the department use a lot of outside attorneys for some of these bigger cases. Of course, the bigger cases haven't really gone to court. But as I understand it, the department is moving toward the ability to handle more and more of these things in-house, and so we'll see fewer and fewer outside counsel. But you really have to ask them what they want to do.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, yes, do we have the Department of Law available to testify? I think I might have a question regarding civil rules, court rules, rather, that would be more appropriate, I think, to ask them.
I don't think we have a member of the Department of Law here. Would it be something that you would like for the record, in which case, if that's the concern, we can, if necessary, hold it over, or we can ask that to be addressed in the Judiciary Committee.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see any need to hold the door.
Okay.
It's more for my own edification.
Would you go ahead and state your question?
Yeah, so that it basically deals with prevailing party, and I was curious as to whether or not there is any kind of court rule out there that would prevent a taxpayer from arbitrarily and capriciously filing in Superior Court. If there's a prevailing party court rule, that would be applied.
Mr. Chairman, you may be referring to the attorney fees provision that Alaska has that's different from any other state, where the prevailing party is entitled to some portion of its expenses in litigating, and that part of the reason for that Alaska adopted that rule is to prevent frivolous litigation, because litigant is exposed to paying attorney's fees for. Is that what you're getting
that
at?
That is essentially what I'm getting at. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if those rules do in fact apply.
Mm-hmm. On appeal. Well, let's see. In the committee substitute, you would have a de novo trial in Superior Court, and the prevailing party would almost certainly be entitled to some attorney's fees under Rule 82. As it now stands, when you appeal in the administrative decision and under the governor's bill, when the administrative decision is appealed to Superior Court, on the appeal, the prevailing party will move for fees. But no fees are available for the administrative proceeding, and they wouldn't be in the governor's bill at the Department of Administration, nor are they now at the Department of Revenue.
Thank you.
Representative Osterman. Yeah.
This is a question, I guess, of the maker of 3.1. The governor's bill has the Department of Administration as a formal appeal process. Now, I'm wondering whether what your feelings are on amending 341 to include that in the formal hearing process and remove what would normally what's in there now.
Of going directly to Superior Court after the informal hearing?
Well, I don't know whether I would want to leave that also in there, but I don't know. Maybe the industry needs to answer that question as to whether they'd feel more comfortable and wouldn't necessarily want to go to court quite so fast if they had the administration, Department of Administration, as their appeal officer, formal appeal officer in the process.
Well, my concern with having it, and that was one of the questions I was going to ask, if I might boomerang that question, unless you have some others, to Ms. Vogt, because that was one of the questions I had, was, and it's for the record so that we'll be able to transfer that, how does moving it from the Department of Revenue to the Department of Administration still, I mean, how does that actually remove it? Because the commissioners are going to be in a group frequently in front of the governor, so that it would be like any of us getting together. Are we really at arm's length, or are we just the same with a different title?
Mr. Chairman, I, you know, can't answer what the perception would be, and since I believe mostly we're dealing here with perceptions, perhaps that's better addressed to the industry. But I will say that many of the states that have, quote, independent review of tax appeals have that review in an administrative agency outside the tax department. Mr. Frankel has been with whom we consulted, has been a proponent of exactly that model. In fact, he is, I've heard him argue for simply taking the appeals officers that you have within the Department of Revenue and moving them over to another department, and that fact will provide them with the evidence, with the independence that, and he's a taxpayer's representative, that that he believes is necessary for taxpayers. And as far as cabinet members sitting around and talking about a particular case, of course, you would have the difficulty there. I mean, the obstacle that the Commissioner of Revenue would then be a litigant in front of the Commissioner of Administration, as it were, and he wouldn't be able to talk about that case. In the governor's bill, the Commissioner of Administration does not adopt the proposed hearing decision made by the administrative law judge within the department. The administrative law judge simply adopts his own decision, and it isn't subject to the approval by a cabinet member. And the administrative law judge would be appointed for a term, would be dismissible only for cause. His or her decision then would be appealed straight to Superior Court. And I believe that the governor's bill sets up the sort of true independence that the parties are looking for. I understand that you can say, well, they're still state employees. Superior Court judges are state employees. So are Supreme Court judges. We all get paid by the oil industry at the bottom.
I guess part of my question then would deal with having the industry, oil industry, give us their opinion on the record as to that question of whether if we amended 341 to include that, would it make a difference?
All right. Would there be anybody in the audience or on teleconference who would be willing to make a statement to that effect? If you understood Representative Osterman's question, would you repeat the question? Maybe we can. Maybe somebody on teleconference would.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I'm interested in knowing if we incorporated that part of the formal hearing process in the Department of Administration as with their legal judge in there, would that solve some of the problems of the oil industry and maybe not have to go to court quite so frequently directly from the informal? And we don't necessarily need to have that answer today, I guess, because we could come to us to judiciary where it gets there. If they want to follow up, I think that's something that if we're going to amend 341, that would be one of the areas I'd look at amending anyway.
Well, I think to answer that part of the question, yes, I can assure you that will be one of the things that will be reviewed. As a matter of fact, it's my hope, and I think I have gotten her positive response that Ms. Vogt would be also invited to work with that judiciary committee to try and see if there isn't some common ground.
I might just for the record say that it's not quite clear to me what you're thinking might be done if the Department of Administration were substituted for the Department of Revenue in the committee substitute. We would object to there being a de novo hearing at the Department of Administration and again at court. That would just be a huge duplication of effort, and there are certainly the dollars, kind of dollars at stake that folks would take two bites of the apple and prolong and draw out some of these cases if that were available. So I think we'd be very opposed to that. I don't know if you had that in mind, but
was yours an instead of or an addition to? Oh yeah, I think that's the department's feeling too, isn't it?
Yes.
I have a few questions. If it be the wish of the committee, I can either read those into the record now or put the questions in with a copy to Ms. Vogt, and she can answer that to the judiciary group.